Welcome everybody. My title is Grasslands vs. Marginal Croplands for switchgrass production. It's a modeling work. We are modeling biomass and hydrological impacts. To give you some introduction, there's an interest to produce cellulose ethanol from plant biomass. For example, this is only for the US. On the wax, we have billions of gallons of biofuel. On the x-axis, we have the years. Historically, we are now around 13 billion gallons of biofuel, and mostly it comes from corn ethanol. But future increase, it's expected to come mostly from advanced biofuels. For example, here in the blue diagonal pattern, we have the cellulose feedstocks like switchgrass. So there is a plan to produce 36 billion gallons by the year 2022. It's a large number, and a large area of land would need to be converted to produce biofuels. So the question is, where should we grow these crops? From the previous presentations, we thought that it's on marginal lands, and the definition it came up with, those lands with poor drainage. We need to define them, because previously we don't have a very clear and widely accepted definition of marginal lands. With this makes regional scale studies usually challenging. For this study, we defined grasslands and marginal croplands as marginal lands, which may be available for bioenergy crop production. We can identify grasslands on any land use maps, but what are marginal croplands? For that, we use the NRC's land capability classification to identify marginal croplands. The system, it classifies lands into 8 classes based on their suitability for the cultivation of crops common to the region. It ranges from class 1, these are lands which has only slight limitation for crop production, to class 8. These are lands that are suitable only for recreation, wildlife, water supply, or aesthetic purpose. For our study, we defined croplands of class 3 and 4 as marginal lands. These classes are characterized by having severe and very severe limitation for crop production. Our objectives are to estimate switchgrass production potential on these lands in the north central Oklahoma, to evaluate the hydrological impacts of converting these lands to switchgrass production, and to determine the trade-off between switchgrass production and the reduction in water yield to the stream. To achieve our objective, we use scenario analysis. In addition to our baseline scenario, which is the current land use, we have two scenarios. Scenario 1 is changing grasslands to switchgrass production, and scenario 2 is changing marginal croplands to switchgrass production. And we use SWOT model to test these scenarios. Our study area is in the north central Oklahoma. Abangwa biomass bioenergy is around this here. And the name of the watershed is Skeleton Creek Watershed. It has a total surface area of about 1,063 kilometers square. We use a SWOT model. SWOT is a soil and water assessment tool. It's a physically based, semi-distributed, continuous river basin model. It was jointly developed by the USDARS and Texas A&M AgriLife Research to study the effect of different management decisions on water, sediment, nutrient, and pesticide. It's a watershed scale model. The way it works is it divides the watershed into a number of sub-watersheds, which are connected by stream networks. As you can see from this, for example, our watershed was divided into about 44 different sub-watersheds. And each sub-watershed is further divided into a number of smaller hydrological response units, which have a unique combination of land use and soil type. For example, if we see this, this is sub-watershed 16. It was divided into about 102 different hydrological response units. And the water balance of SWAT simulates the water balance based on the soil profile water balance of each hydrological response unit. It's a physically based model. What it means is it requires a number of inputs. The good thing is most of these inputs, you can find them freely on different government organizations. For example, we obtained the DAM from USGS. We had the Sergo soil map from USDA NRCs, and the land use map from the USDA NSS and USGS. As you can see from the land use map, the major land use in our watershed is winter wheat production, followed by grassland herbaceous. So for each map unit in the soil map, there is a land capability class. So if we overlay that land capability class on the land use map, we could find those lands, which are those agricultural lands which are marginal. In addition to these geospatial data, we obtain 13 years of weather data from Oklahoma Masonic stations, 13 years of observed flow data from USGS at gauge stations. SWAT, it's a big model and it has different models in it. For example, it uses the modeling approach of EPIC to simulate crop growth. For our case, we use the SWAT default for alamo switchgrass in order to simulate this crop growth, except we change few parameters like initial leaf area index, initial biomass, and radiation use efficiency. We apply a constant nitrogen fertilization rate of 85 kilograms per hectare. This is a biomass production. As you can see, it ranges from 6.5 tons per hectare to 15. This on scenario one, which is when we change grasslands to switchgrass production. As you can see, the largest good biomass is observed on those grasslands which are close to the stream networks, whereas the lowest is observed close to the boundary of the sub-watersheds. And on average, the average biomass was about 12 tons per hectare. And on marginal croplands, the range wasn't that high as on the grassland, but it varies from about 8.8 to around 13. And the highest biomass was observed on the southeastern part. Usually we observe a high biomass in areas where we had a deep soil because of the water water holding capacity of those soils. And the average biomass was about 12 tons per hectare. This shows the average annual water balance and biomass. This average is for 10 years, from 2002 to 2011. This for the baseline, we have an evapotranspiration of about 660 and stream flow of about 138 millimeter. But when we change grasslands to switchgrass production, there was an increase in evapotranspiration by 37 millimeter, and there was a reduction in stream flow. But when we change marginal cropland to switchgrass production, there was a slight increase in evapotranspiration and a slight decrease in stream flow. Just to give you some idea about what 1 millimeter means, it's a huge number. It's multiplied by the area, which is about 1 millimeter cube, which is the amount of water used to drill and fracture about 65 wells or to fill about 425 Olympic size swimming pools. So it's a huge amount. This is the annual. How does it distribute throughout the season? This shows the monthly comparison of baseline and scenario one. Again, scenario one is grassland to switchgrass production. On the top, we have evapotranspiration, and on the bottom, stream flow. On the right y-axis, it's the relative change. When we have a positive relative change, that means there's an increase, and negative is a reduction. So as you can see from here, there is an increase in evapotranspiration throughout the year, which results a decrease in stream flow. But when we change the current land use condition, when we change marginal croplands to switchgrass production, there was an increase in evapotranspiration during the summer months, whereas a reduction in evapotranspiration during the other months. It's because the major land use in our study area is winter wheat production, so when we change the winter crops to summer crops, we are increasing evapotranspiration during the summer. It results a reduction in stream flow during the summer months, whereas during the early spring and during the winter months, there was an increase in stream flow. This shows the hydrologic cost-effect ratio. It shows areas where our change impacts the stream flow. The hydrologic cost-effect ratio is the water yield reduction per amount of biomass production. So as you can see, that value is high on scenario one compared to scenario two. And on average, it's about 94.5 meter cube in order to produce 1 ton of biomass on grasslands. Whereas on marginal croplands, it was only 17.3. As a summary, we can use the NRC's land capability classification system to identify marginal lands. And this will help us to have a better regional scale perspective bioenergy cropping systems and water resources. When we change scenario one, grasslands to switchgrass production, there was a relatively large reduction in stream flow and an increase in total evapotranspiration. But when we change marge acro plants to switchgrass production, we observed a smaller reduction in stream flow and a small increase in evapotranspiration. But we observed a shift in evapotranspiration from winter to summer months. And xylorrhage cost per ton of biomass production is predicted to be about 5 times greater for grasslands than marginal croplands. What it means is, if we don't want to reduce the stream flow, first we have to use marginal croplands before we start using grasslands. With that, thank you.
Okay.
Any questions?
Have time for one or two questions.
All right.
Yes.
Do you have an idea what's the percentage of within the watershed we could use for perennials to support or sustain the row crop system according to the finding?
It depends. For example, this one, it shows those areas. You can, this hydrologic cost effect ratio, if you don't want to, like, you can have one number. For example, you can say, I need those areas where the reduction is less than 50 metric cube per ton of production. So you can identify those areas. But the percentage, scenario one in our case, it's about 34% of the watershed. Scenario two is about 27% of the total watershed.
Other question? Okay, we have one more speaker before the break.